I'm Captain Kevin Smith, and this is Throttle Up, a radio show and podcast dedicated to the proposition that critical thinking, when employed, can dramatically improve performance in whatever we are doing, enable us to solve problems that others avoid, equip us to become thought leaders instead of followers, and provide us with the intellectual resources and moral courage to support and defend America and its Constitution. Our motto is clarify, reason, win. That is, clarify the actual, employ analytic reason, and achieve mission success. Our website, throttleupradio.com, that has all kinds of information. Also, our podcast is located there, as well as iTunes. And of course, we have a blog, so please visit our website. Our support staff, Evergroove Studios for audio engineering services. They are located in Evergreen, Colorado, and Reflections Printing for multimedia support, and they are located in St. George, Utah. Our book is Critical Thinking Essentials, Quick Reference Handbook. It is available from Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and other outlets. Our broadcast time on Red State Talk Radio, we are on the weekends, both Saturday and Sunday, on the main channel. That's at 7 p.m. and the Encore channel, that's at 6 p.m. Okay, welcome back to another Throttle Up radio show and podcast. And it's great to be here. We have been doing this for a while, and this is a delightful time for me as I have this opportunity to talk to those of you out there. And of course, this is a radio show and podcast. All of this stuff is preserved, and it's available, and you can find it easy enough. It's on our website, throttleupradio.com, as well as iTunes and actually other platforms as well. So this is fun for all of us on this side. We have a pretty good production team. Our audio engineer does a fantastic job. And our administrative staff and all the help that goes into producing something like this. And we like to think of it as a high-quality production. We work pretty hard on it every week to make it so. Okay, so here we are in the midst of this this global issue, this the conclusion of the so-called pandemic, assuming it is coming to a conclusion. And that's, I guess that's kind of an open question, whether or not it's coming to a conclusion, whether or not the remedies that we have put in place are actually effective, the non-pharmaceutical as well as the pharmaceutical remedies that we have put in place, how effective are they? And what do we need to do in the short term, medium term, as well as the long term? Okay. Now, I guess you could say that in addition to or against that backdrop, there is other things that are going on as well. There are things that are happening locally, and certainly there are things that are happening regionally and nationally that is dealing with the situation at hand in terms of what's going on socio-politically. Okay, so where are we as a country? What is going on in terms of the current events? What is likely to happen in the future? How can we make sense out of it? Now, we're dealing in a world that is, I guess you could say that this world is difficult to comprehend because there are competing versions of reality, or there are competing versions of what others want us to believe is in fact real, is in fact actual, and is in fact something that is occurring. And so I guess you could say we have a rather bizarre situation here, is because there is a concerted effort to convince the majority of Americans that what is presented to them is in fact real. What is being presented to the American people is in fact reality. It is in fact the truth. It is in fact something that has actually occurred, and it is something that ought to be believed and ought to be supported and ought to be embraced. Okay, now let me give you one example of what I'm talking about. And by the way, this show is a continuation of our previous shows. If you recall, we talked about various aspects of critical thinking in terms of how to decide and then how to think. I believe it was first was how to think, and then how to decide was second, and this one is the third installment of that train of thought, is how do we know that something is true? And that gets us into, and, you know, I admit that this is a little bit esoteric, but it need not be but it does get us into this whole area of thought, which is sometimes called the theory of knowledge. Sometimes it is called other things. Theory of knowledge is okay. I mean, that's something that, you know, that we can consider. What is it in terms of, well, and with respect to that, the theory of knowledge tries to figure out in some theoretical form or fashion how do we know that something is true? How do we determine if something is actually true or something is not true? It could be false. It could be misleading. It could be corrupted data. That gets us back into a discussion of how do we know that whatever information that we have received has not been corrupted? How do we know it is factual or actual? It is truthful information, or has it been corrupted either intentionally or unintentionally? And if the information that we have, we could also call it the data package if you like to do it that way. If the information we have, is it verifiably true? Has it been determined to be accurate? Or has it been determined to be suspect? Or has it been determined to be corrupted? Or can we say that we can say, well, we don't know. You know, we just don't know. And then it goes beyond that. And then let me give you an actual example of this. All right. So this was a recent video clip on YouTube. It was Biden was talking about the military and was in the process of promoting a couple of generals And they both happened to be female, and he was discussing the diversity aspect of the composition of the military. And in the process of doing that, he had mentioned his Secretary of Defense, but he did not remember his name. He kind of stumbled through that. Now, you could explain it away that he didn't need to remember the name of a Secretary of Defense, but that would be kind of a stretch of logic, which I think would be stretching beyond the breaking point. Nevertheless, he did not mention, he stumbled around it, but he did not mention the name of his Secretary of Defense.
Okay.
And it was a kind of an uncomfortable moment. It was a moment in which you kind of felt embarrassed for him, because here's he standing up and making this announcement, and he was fumbling through stuff that he ought to be prepared for. And that, you know, and then you could take that away and you could say, okay, well, that's unfortunate, and then just go on with your daily lives, or you could consider it a little more deeply. How should we consider it? Is this something that is a harbinger of things to come? Is this something that is a concerning, if you will? Is this something that we ought to be concerned with? Is it something that is disturbing? And I would say that this certainly points to a deeper problem. Now, let me stop there and just say, okay, well, just we're going to hold that thought. Going to hold that thought right there for a moment. Now, we're going to interject another thought. Another thought is this, is that Biden has not held a press conference and took question and answers yet since he's been inaugurated as the president of the United States. That's an extraordinarily long period of time, and people are wanting their political leadership to discuss with them the ongoing issues related to the economy, related to the COVID pandemic, related to the unemployment, related to the sick and the hospitalizations, related to energy and so forth and so on, related to could be the severe weather that we're experiencing, earthquakes and volcanoes. Okay, but none of that is being discussed. It's like, okay, we're living in a vacuum here. And the vacuum is we're not really getting much in terms of meaningful and viable information. Now, is that intentional? Maybe there is forces afoot that don't want us to know anything, don't want us to know anything important, treating us like children who are engaged in nothing more than trivial activities. Okay, so that's the order of the day right now. Now, I'll go back to my previous thought there, which was, okay, we don't have any Q&A. We have this discussion by Biden stumbling through and forgetting, or whatever, the name of the Secretary of Defense. And you begin to wonder, okay, is this, and I know that Newt Gingrich has already wondered this, is this something that is concerning? What do we have here? We have somebody that appears to be going through the motions of pretending to be the president of the United States, but actually is not. He is not pulling the strings. He is not in charge at all. And this facade is being offered to us, and we are expected to accept it without question. Okay, how do we know that this is a facade? How do we know that this may or may not be the truth. How do we know that they are presenting an individual that is not cognitively impaired, or how do we know that this individual is in fact cognitively impaired? How do we know these things? What kinds of processes, what kinds of cognitive activities and mechanisms do we need to bring to bear to be able to figure out if something is true or if something is not true? Now, fundamentally, what we're dealing with is we want to live in a world, we want to understand the world as accurately as we possibly can. We want to be accurate. We don't want to make mistakes. We don't want to be fooled. We don't want to be foolish. We don't want to foolishly engage in something that is silly. It is stupid. We don't want to be stupid. We want to be smart. And the way we are, to the extent that we can consider ourselves to be smart, we want to be able to understand things clearly and accurately. We don't want to be fooled. Okay. So what we have here, I can call it, you know, we can think of it as a four-legged stool, if you like that kind of thing. In terms of a metaphor, we can look at it as the, you know, is the four big things that we are faced with as thinking humans. What are they? They are think or thinking. They are reason or reasoning. That's two. They are to know or knowing or knowledge. That's three. And the fourth one is the ability to actually do something, the ability to perform, to the ability to take some kind of action. So what we have here is we have think, reason, know, and do. Those are the four things. Okay. We have been discussing over the last couple of weeks, we have been discussing this thing that we call knowledge or to know. We need to know something, and we need to know that something, or another way of saying that, is that that which we know, we need to understand it to be true, it to be actual, it to be viable, it to be realistic, and it to be that which is necessary for us to proceed to the performance phase. If we believe that something is true that is not true, obviously our ability to perform is going to be impaired. And so we cannot, or should not, engage in any kind of purposeful activity until we have established the knowledge base by which we can then effectively perform or do something that is useful. Okay, so let's discuss that for just a few minutes. Let's discuss what we would call, in a general sense, what we would call a theory of knowledge. What is it that we should know? How do we begin to understand that whatever we know is, in fact, accurate, truthful, or viable? How do we know that? So let's pause for a minute. We're going to play an audio clip here momentarily, and we're going to be discussing some of the key aspects of this thing that we call knowledge, or another way of saying that is this thing that we call the theory of knowledge, with respect to what actually is that which is true. How do we determine if something is true? And the other way of thinking of it is, how do we audit our thinking process to determine if what we believe to be true is actually true? How do we do that?
Okay, so we're going to take a look at some different philosophical theories of truth. And yes, there are different ones. in different situations in real life, we seem to believe that truth means different things and is established in different ways. So truth may be what corresponds with what's out there in the world. That's a very common understanding of truth. It could be what fits with our other beliefs and meanings, or it can be what gets us what we want. Right. And if you take a look at the way that you use the term truth and the concept of truth, you may see this to be true. It's kind of fluid in the sense we use it in different circumstances to describe different criteria, for instance. Now, for our class, we're going to take a look at three specific theories of truth. The first is known as correspondence, and that's the most commonplace understanding of what it means for an idea or a statement to be true. And next we'll look at coherence, the coherence theory of truth. And last we'll look at the pragmatic theory of truth. So, correspondence theory of truth. Definition is, it's a proposition which is a sentential or sentence-based object of belief. A proposition is true if and only if it corresponds to features of the actual objective world as it is in itself. So, truth is a property of statements about reality or ideas about reality. Again, this is our most common understanding of what it means for a sentence or a proposition to be true. And this theory of truth connects most directly with the idea that there actually is an objective world as it is in itself. That's known as metaphysical realism, and that we can therefore know it. And under this theory, truth is seen as a mental content to objective world relation. So the objective world out there is in fact a certain way, and your idea about it is true insofar as it matches up or corresponds with that objective world or that feature of the objective world. So for instance, you could say, the pen is on the table, right? This belief can be considered true insofar as your sensations of the pen being on the table correspond to conditions in the outside world. Back for a second. Makes sense, right? If I say the pen is on the table, it is true insofar as I can see, hear, smell, feel the pen on the table. Then my mental content matches up with the objective features of reality as it is in itself. But there are some problems with the correspondence theory. It's more like limitations. So, for instance, what about hypothetical propositions that are true? A hypothetical proposition would go like this. If I complete all of my assignments and do well on my tests, then I can get an A in this class. That doesn't have the same mental content to objective world relation as, say, the pen is on the table is. That's a different kind of proposition. So what does it correspond to that's actually out there in the world? Do you see? Or what about moral truths or falsity? What if you say, murder is morally wrong, right? And that's a true statement, you claim. What does that match up to in the objective world? In the objective world, you can see murder causes pain, murder causes harm, but you can't find the truth or falsity of the statement that murder is morally wrong out there in the objective world. So correspondence theory, doesn't accommodate moral statements. Or mathematical truths, for that matter. You can say 12 divided by 3 is 4. But you can't see numbers out in the objective world. You can see units, right, that numbers stand for, but we're talking about something different here. How about logical truths? To what empirically verifiable entities do these sorts of propositions actually refer, such that correspondence theory is going to work for us in all of these cases? And these are limitations of the correspondence theory of truth. Also, some claim that we don't have mind-independent access to reality, which is required if we're to compare our thoughts with reality in itself. So essentially, we'd be comparing our thoughts about reality with our thoughts about reality, right? So if you remember, Barclay, for instance, says we don't have mind-independent access to reality. We just have access to our mental representations of reality. So again, this is a massive limitation of correspondence theory of truth. And what about truths of a personal nature? I feel, if you say, I feel confused, that could be true or false. But as of yet, we don't have any way of empirically verifying or falsifying something that is strictly personal. And what about this proposition? The correspondence theory of truth is true, which is underlying the correspondence of theory of truth, correct? That it's true. But to what out there in the objective world does that sentence correspond with, such that we could verify it? Do you understand? So those are all limitations of the correspondence theory. This brings us to the coherence theory of truth. And before I go any further, I wanted to make this very clear. These theories of truth, correspondence, coherence, and pragmatic, these are best understood as complementary theories of truth as opposed to competing and exclusive theories of truth. Right. If you try to understand one of them as the sole theory of truth, you're going to be leaving a lot out. So, again, just try to see these as complements as opposed to, competition. Okay, back. Coherence theory of truth. The truth of any true proposition or belief consists in its coherence with some specified set of propositions or beliefs, right? So this theory of truth connects most directly with the idea that reality is fundamentally mental, right? Which is known as metaphysical or subjective idealism. If there is an objective world as it is in itself, we can't really know it directly. We can only know our mental representations of it. So you can see how coherence theory of truth is trying to accommodate that problem, that limitation of correspondence theory of truth, right? I think it was the second bullet point prior. Kind of like a jigsaw puzzle. That's how you should look at coherence theory of truth. And under this theory, truth is seen as a mental content to mental content relation, as opposed to mental content to objective feature of the outside world relation. So here's a, for instance, using the pen again. Say here's our proposition. The pen is on the ground. So this is a true statement insofar as you have a specified set of propositions which cohere with one another. I know this is very bizarre, but it's like I said, it's an answer to, it's an expansion of our truth theories in order to account for our ability to say that something is true or false that we can't have any real empirical evidence about, or at least as of yet, right? Which correspondence theory requires. So the pen is on the ground. You can say, oh, well, I heard the pen hitting the ground, and the person sitting at the desk next to me looked up and heard that as well. and I can sense that the pen's no longer where I thought I left it. So since all of these beliefs cohere with one another, you could say that the pen is on the ground is true. Again, I know that sounds a little bizarre, but here's a slightly better example. So for instance, we say that it's the case that there are black holes out in space. We can't see black holes directly, but the idea of their existence, it coheres with other cosmological ideas that we have, right? So we know that matter drawn into the center of a spiral heats up, and at certain temperatures, this is going to show on X-rays. And these X-rays can be seen by space telescopes. So we theorize that there are these things called black holes, and that their existence is real. That the sentence, there are black holes, is true. Right? But it's true in a coherence sense of truth, as opposed to correspondence sense of truth. Excuse me. Problems with the coherence theory. If truth consists only in the relation of some proposition or belief to others in that kind of system, then you're committed to a radical idealism regarding the objective world. And the specification problem. Since both a particular proposition or belief and its negation can individually cohere with at least one set of propositions or beliefs, it follows that contradictory propositions and beliefs can be shown to be true as well. And let me give you an example using the pen, right? So we'll go back. The specification problem with the coherence theory of truth goes like this. You're trying to say, is this true or not? The pen is on the ground. Well, if you heard it hitting the ground, somebody else heard it hitting the ground, and you can sense it no longer is where you thought you left it, then the pen is on the ground. Right? But the specification problem says, you know, you can negate all of these, including the claim itself, and you'll still have consistency, but are you going to have truth? So you could say, hey, the pen is not on the ground. I did not hear the pen hitting the ground. Nobody else heard the pen hitting the ground. I don't sense the pen is no longer where I thought I left it. In other words, the pen is still where I left it. Hence, the pen is not on the ground. All that's going to work together. The coherence theory of truth is going to say, well, then it can be true. But what if it's not true? What are the things on the ground? I hope that made sense. Back. So in other words, it leaves open the possibility that although all of our beliefs in a specified set could support each other, they could in fact be false. It could be an echo chamber of falsity. Last, we have the pragmatic theory of truth. And that states that a proposition is true if and only if the belief in that proposition is pragmatic or if it's useful in a certain way. And this theory takes the individual subjective life into account. Again, I'm going to remind you, it is really best and most fruitful to see these theories of truth as complementary as opposed to contradictory. Right? And the idea is more that consider your subject matter and use the one that is most appropriate. Okay, let's continue. So a proposition or belief is true if it allows you to interact effectively and efficiently with the universe, if it works. A true idea has what's known as cash value in experiential terms. We don't need complete verification that the idea matched up exactly with reality. We only need to show that the consequences of holding the idea will have practical value. Now, this is a quick aside. I really don't care for the phrase, this is my truth, right? But this it kind of smacks of this theory, don't you think? If I'm going to do a little bit of, if I'm going to be generous with that saying, I'm speaking my truth. That notion kind of accords with the pragmatic theory of truth. Know what I mean? So, here's a for instance. Person A may believe that making a lot of money is of the utmost importance. So to person A, the proposition, earning a lot of money is the most important aspect of life, is true. And this belief will pragmatically guide A's actions in life. Notice the subjectivity here. Person B may attach little significance to money, and instead think that having good friends and close family bonds is of the utmost importance. So to B, the proposition having friends and family is the most important aspect of life is true, and this belief will pragmatically guide B's actions in life. And, of course, we have to take a look at the problems with the pragmatic theory. Pragmatic theory ignores the common meaning of truth. Consider the following two propositions. It is true that the pen is on the ground, and it is useful to believe that the pen is on the ground. According to the pragmatic theory of truth, these two statements would have the same meaning when clearly they do not. And also, a belief may work and be entirely false with regard to the common meaning of truth. For instance, the belief in Santa Claus works quite well for many children for the explanation of why there are a bunch of presents under the tree and why they should behave throughout the year. So that's it for Theories of Truth 101. I'll remind you one more time. Most useful and best understood as complementary as opposed to exclusive, strictly competing. You know, the problems cited with one theory help the next theory establish itself, or help guide people to what the newest theory needs to account for, right? So again, complementary as opposed to exclusive.
Okay, so yeah, that's a little deep there and a little esoteric, but it's also something that we ought to consider because it takes us down a little bit of a deeper intellectual discussion, a little bit more meaningful in terms of how do we know what we know? How do we discover or determine if something is true? How do we determine the truth? How do we go about figuring out if something is true or if something is not true? How do we do that? And this is a pretty good exercise. We could call it a mental exercise, but it's okay to exercise our mental faculties as well. There's nothing wrong with it. I see people, unfortunately, that don't like to do that. They jump to conclusions. They just assume what is the popular belief. And that's something that I guess I need to spend a little bit more time on as well. But it occurs to me that do people believe what they actually believe, or do they believe what they think others want them to believe? And I have seen that. It's a very subtle cognitive distortion there. If you have a true and actual image, or is the image distorted? This is a very interesting cognitive distortion because, first and foremost, is what you believe to be true, is it based upon objective reality, or are you predisposed to at least openly proclaim that you believe something because you believe that that is what others expect you to believe in? And that's a very important consideration as we go forward. All right, so let's jump back into this whole issue of theory of knowledge and theory of truth. All right, what is it that we are being asked to believe? Fundamentally, what is it that we are being asked to believe is two things. Number one, this is, of course, right now. Number one is that we are being asked to believe that the COVID-19 pandemic is real. It has circled the globe. It has produced an enormous amount of death and destruction on planet Earth. We are being asked to believe that. Okay, fine. Question here for all critical thinkers is, number one, is that true or is it not true? The second thing we are being asked to believe is that Joe Biden was elected to the presidency of the United States on November 5th-ish of 2020, and his election was legitimate. It reflected the will of the people. We are asked to believe that. Oh, and by the way, the evidence for such a thing is that it is past the scrutiny of the state legislatures and legislators and the Senate, as described in the Constitution. Okay, we are asked to believe such a thing. Okay, with respect to that, and with respect to the theory of truth, or another way of saying that is the theory of knowledge and the theory of truth. With respect to that, is that something that we ought to believe because we have investigated it ourselves and determined that actually is true? Okay. And our investigations have determined that all of the information that has come out that suggest that there was, in fact, voter fraud going on, all that information has been thoroughly investigated, and it is determined to be not true. Okay, that's what we are being asked to believe. Okay, so let's go to the last one first. All of this stuff has been thoroughly investigated. All right, so is that actually true? And the answer is no, it is not actually true. We have not investigated anything, any of those accusations and assertions in an objective court of law. Not one of them has gotten into the courthouse, and not one of them has allowed information to be presented on both sides objectively and fairly, not one single one. Okay, that aspect of it. Number two is it plausible? Let's say, now there's two aspects here of what I consider to be the area that is called uncertainty. There's two aspects to uncertainty. There is plausibility and then there's probability. Is something plausible means that its occurrence could actually occur, but we don't know what is the likelihood. Okay, that's plausibility. Is it theoretically plausible for this to happen or for that to happen? Okay. And then the other thing is what's the probability? If it is plausible, then what is its probability that it could occur from something like low all the way up to high, and in terms of certitude? A good example of this would be when they tested the air quality on modern airplanes. They did this scientifically, and they did this with controlled experimentation in a scientific setting. They tested it, and they determined that it was 99.9% likely that the quality of the air that you were breathing would not contain any coronavirus. Okay, 99.9%. That's the probability. Now, you can say, what's a possibility? Okay, well, we go in there and say, well, it's possible, but what's the probability? All right, so it wasn't possible for Biden to be elected, given the numbers that we saw during the ongoing election on November 5th. Or was it possible? And you can say, well, anything is possible. Okay, well, I mean, you could say that, but based upon some, you know, some notion, based upon some understanding of what could possibly occur, is it possible or probable? Is it possible that Biden could have come so far, come from so far behind that he would eventually wind up the winner? And of course, you know, the question here is what can we believe? Yes, we have these institutions that supposedly looked into it and declared that the election was fair and it was valid and it was appropriate. Yes, but we have this other body of evidence that suggests it was not, and we ought to have some kind of a impartial way for us to examine the situation clearly, thoroughly, and without bias. And you can say that, well, okay, we have a court system that in place, but that didn't seem to produce the results that I think ought to be expected of us. Did not seem to produce the results that you would expect, which is the results being, which is a place, a forum by which we can objectively examine the evidence. So that was not something that was produced. It was not something that was provided for. Now, you know, my way of thinking is that, well, the first thing that comes to my mind is that, why not? What's wrong with that idea? I mean, why not have a place where we can go that is a place where objectivity reigns, a place where we can enter and we can declare and we can be assured that everything will be considered without bias or prejudice. Everything will be considered on a completely objective basis. Something has to rest on its own merits. It has to succeed on its own merits, and nothing else will be allowed to enter this space. Why doesn't a civilized society have that available, and why was it not provided for? And it's not, you know, in my view, it's not a question of whether, you know, Trump lost or Biden won, or whether Trump won or Biden lost. Those are important considerations, but there's something that comes before that. The consideration that comes before that is, where do we engage that search for the truth? Where do we employ the theory of knowledge and the theory of truth as we go through this? If we are going to establish a place, a forum, a formalized mechanism by which we examine something objectively, then we better be pretty good at understanding the theory of knowledge and the theory of truth. And going back to the beginning, this is part of the package that we call critical thinking, or what I call critical thinking essentials. This is part of the package. The package is that which will lead us in the right direction, which is the ability to think critically. Part of that package here that I'm discussing is, in fact, the theory of truth. What is true, and how do we know it's true if it is being proclaimed to be true by others? How do we know that? How do we test it? What is our truth detector that we employ? What is the truth determining algorithm that we employ? And I suppose that ought to be something that I ought to work up and present in the near future. What is the truth detecting algorithm? How do we determine, or I should put it this way, what is the truth determination algorithm that we're going to employ? How do we know that something is true? What is our theory of knowledge and theory of truth? Are we going to know something, and is that something that we know going to be true and useful and effective and viable? It is going to produce tangible, positive results because we know something that we believe to be true. Does it have a mechanism? This is the pragmatic aspect of it, of course, of truth. But is it true? And how do we know that it is true? And that becomes this place, this forum. And we ought to insist that we have such a thing. And it could be within the court system, or it could be that we just do it. If the courts are not going to do it, then we will find some other mechanism by which it is done, and we will invite the players, and we will reserve the location. It could be a big auditorium, it doesn't matter, and we will do our own objective investigation. And in fact, that's probably what we ought to be doing. We ought to be saying, okay, you come and present your evidence, and I'm going to come and present my evidence in this place that we call the objective space, and we're going to determine objectively whether or not this election was fair and impartial. If it was not fair and impartial, then we have two options. We can go with option B, which is to turn over or to declare that President Trump is the winner and inaugurate him. Or we can then, if we don't want to do that, or for some reason that is not the solution, then we re-vote. Then we reconvene the whole voting apparatus and we do it over again. Okay, I see I'm out of time once again, and delightful to be here. And we will see you all next week. Well, that went fast. So this is a close of another show, another Throttle Up. And before I go, I would like to acknowledge a few people. I'd like to thank my listening audience for being here. And I would like to thank Red State Talk Radio for providing us an opportunity for each and every weekend to put on this radio show that we call Throttle Up. And I would like to thank all of you veterans out there. Thank you for your service. And I would like to thank the families of the veterans. Thank you for supporting this noble cause. And I would like to thank all of you on active duty in the Guard and the Reserve. Thank you for serving this great country of ours. And with that, I would like to say goodbye, and we will see you all again next week.